Chapter 49. Doctrines, and some Roman Catholic prisoners for denying his own supremacy. Still the people bore it, and not a gentleman in England raised his hand. But, by a just retribution, it soon came out that Catherine Howard, before her marriage, had been really guilty of such crimes as the king had falsely attributed to his second wife Anne Boleyn. So, again the dreadful ex made the king a widower, and this queen passed away as so many in that reign had passed away before her. As an appropriate pursuit under the circumstances, Henry then applied himself to superintending the composition of a religious book called A Necessary Doctrine for Any Christian Man. Apostrophe he must have been a little confused in his mind, I think, at about this period. For he was so false to himself, as to be true to someone. That someone being Cranmer, whom the Duke of Norfolk and others of his enemies tried to ruin, but to whom the king was steadfast, and to whom he one night gave his ring, charging him when he should find himself, next day, accused of treason, to show it to the council board. This Cranmer did to the confusion of his enemies. I suppose the king thought he might want him a little longer. He married yet once more. Yes, strange to say, he found in England another woman who would become his wife, and she was Catherine Parr, widow of Lord Latimer. She leaned towards the Reformed religion, and it is some comfort to know that she tormented the king considerably by arguing a variety of doctrinal points with him on all possible occasions. She had very nearly done this to her own destruction. After one of these conversations, the king in a very black mood actually instructed Gardiner, one of his bishops who favored the popish opinions, to draw a bill of accusation against her, which would have inevitably brought her to the scaffold, where her predecessors had died, but that one of her friends picked up the paper of instructions which had been dropped in the palace, and gave her timely notice. She fell ill with terror, but managed the king so well, when he came to entrap her into further statements by saying that she had only spoken on such points to divert his mind, and to get some information from his extraordinary wisdom, that he gave her a kiss, and called her his sweetheart. And, when the chancellor came next day actually, to take her to the Tower, the king sent him about his business, and honored him with the epithets of a beast, a knave, and a fool. So near was Catherine Parr to the block, and so narrow was her escape. There was war with Scotland in this reign, and a short clumsy war with France for favoring Scotland. But, the events at home were so dreadful, and leave such an enduring stain on the country, that I need say no more of what happened abroad. A few more horrors, and this reign is over. There was a lady, Anne Askew, in Lincolnshire, who inclined to the Protestant opinions, and whose husband being a fierce Catholic, turned her out of his house. She came to London, and was considered as offending against the Six Articles, and was taken to the Tower, and put upon the rack, probably because it was hoped that she might, in her agony, criminate some obnoxious persons, if falsely, so much the better. She was tortured without uttering a cry, until the lieutenant of the Tower would suffer his men to torture her no more, and then two priests who were present actually pulled off their robes, and turned the wheels of the rack with their own hands, so rending and twisting and breaking her, that she was afterwards carried to the fire in a chair. She was burned with three others, a gentleman, a clergyman, and a tailor, and so the world went on. Either the king became afraid of the power of the Duke of Norfolk, and his son the Earl of Surrey, or they gave him some offense, but he resolved to pull them down, to follow all the rest who were gone. The son was tried first of course for nothing, and defended himself bravely, but of course he was found guilty, and of course he was executed. Then his father was laid hold of, and left for death too. But the king himself was left for death by a greater king, and the earth was to be rid of him at last. He was now a swollen, hideous spectacle, with a great hole in his leg, and so odious to every sense, that it was dreadful to approach him. When he was found to be dying, Cranmer was sent for from his palace at Croydon, and came with all speed, but found him speechless. Happily, in that hour he perished. He was in the 56th year of his age, and the 38th of his reign. Henry VIII has been favored by some Protestant writers, because the Reformation was achieved in his time. But the mighty merit of it lies with other men, and not with him, and it can be rendered none the worse by this monster's crimes, and none the better by any defense of them. The plain truth is, that he was a most intolerable ruffian, a disgrace to human nature, and a blot of blood and grease upon the history of England. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.